All right. A little bit different if you're listening to the recording. Last week's recording did not happen, so I'm recording the 8 o'clock service with the Syme family here. And no one else right now, but, you know, people often walk in late. So we're going to record this and see what we can do. We're going to be going over the topic of contradictions in the Bible. And so we're going to have a blast with this as we try and look up all of... I went online. And what was really cool was there are a couple websites dedicated to the eradication of the Christian faith solely based upon trying to prove that the Bible has mistakes, is irrelevant, is unreliable. And so there's a couple websites, and it was cool because, again, they did all my research for me. They listed all these contradictions in the Bible. And so what I did is I went through the contradictions, and I tried to pull out the best contradictions that I could possibly find. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at these contradictions and see if we as a little group can come up with the answer of the contradiction. Now, as we go through it, you're going to start finding out that sometimes the answer the answers start grouping themselves in categories. That the way you answer one question, you can answer another question. I found four categories of contradictions in the Bible and have them listed out, and I have them up here on the computer, so we'll be able to take a look at them. So I'm using the lavalier. So the other one still doesn't work. So, but that's okay, because this one's working. You're going to still go for it, test it. The only problem is I'm using power cord to power this. So I don't know if we have another power cord for that. So, yeah. Don't understand it, but oh well. Yeah, I know. That's what it does. It's a fickle little thing. We can play with it downstairs again if we want to. So we have four categories of contradictions, and we're going to try and answer all these contradictions. It was interesting last week when I started to do this, we broke off actually into groups. Everyone kind of took five, six, seven other people, and they had to answer them themselves. And what was funny was a bunch of people started to, I don't know, semi-freak out, like, oh my gosh, there's got to be some complex, complicated answer to this problem that we have. And truly, there are maybe two or three that are complex. The rest of them, I bet you could, in a gut reaction, answer the question without any problem. So that is what we're going to do. We are going to get, hopefully this should work, so you should be able to see this. Does it work? Yes, there we go. So question becomes, how many... Because it says in the book of Matthew and the book of Luke, how many blind men came up and talked to Jesus that day? Matthew chapter 20 said two blind men were sitting by the roadside, and when they heard that Jesus was going by, they shouted, Lord, Son of David, have mercy on us. But in Luke's version, it says as Jesus approached Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. Two different times. It's actually a very easy thing. If you went back to Matthew chapter 20 and looked a little bit more in the context, you would find out that this was as they were about to leave Jericho, two blind men were here. And this one is as they approached Jericho. So, yeah, one episode, they're walking in. There's a blind man by the side of the road. They talked with him. And as they're getting ready to leave Jericho, that's another answer. Now, this one is kind of interesting because there's a couple of different answers. It could also be, because I think probably you were saying, two like totally separate instances at two totally different time periods. That is also an answer because Jesus came in and out of these cities quite regularly. Another answer is that it could have been two blind people, but it was only one that really kind of had the encounter with Jesus. You know, it's like when I say, the other night I went out with Ron Rapp and we went out and had dinner. And then you talk to my wife, and she talks about how she and Ron and Christy and myself all went out to dinner. So you might say to yourself, well, there's a contradiction, because I only talked about Ron. Well, that's because the majority of the night, I'm actually talking with Ron while Heather's talking with Christy. So sometimes that happens, you know, how many people are there? Sometimes you only talk about the one that's the most interesting when maybe there was actually two there. There is one other answer that's kind of interesting. Because Jericho was one of those sites that got built up and built down, tear down, built up, tear down. And so there actually was a new Jericho and an old Jericho. So the question, It could be, which one was he? Was he going into one and or going into a total separate time, going into old Jericho? It very well could be. So those are some answers to it. Pretty easy. All right, here's a theological one. What is the relationship between Jesus Christ and God? In John chapter 10, it says, I and the Father are one. So that means that Jesus and God are equal, right? But here in John 14, it says, if you love me, you'd be glad that I'm going to the Father, for the Father is greater than I. But I thought up here they were one. But how can one be greater? Yeah, this is more of a theological question, because what happens in something like this is, do we say that Jesus Christ was fully human? Was he a fully human being? And we'd say, yeah, he was a human being. And at the same time, he was also fully God in the flesh. So can you be both things at the same time? Is it actually possible? Well, I think so. I mean, Alan, are you a husband? Are you a father? A grandfather? Are you a son? Sometimes we play different roles or we have different things. So it is not a contradiction to have Jesus saying, I and the Father are one, which is back in those days essentially saying, I am God in the flesh. I am 100% God here. At the same time, he submits himself all the time to the Father. Sometimes this could even be looked at in a marriage-type relationship where Heather and I are equal. But there are times that Heather submits to me, times that I submit to her. But we're yet equal. How can we be equal but yet submit to one another? So it's not a contradiction. It's a question of both answers are actually right. Here's another question. Was it lawful for the Jews to put Jesus Christ to death? In John 19, the Jews insisted, we have a law, and according to that law, he must die because he claimed to be the Son of God. So the Jews said they had a law that he should die. But in John chapter 18, just one chapter before, it says, take him yourselves and judge him by your own law. And the Jews replied, but we have no right to execute anyone, the Jews objected. So wait a second. The Jews said they had a law, but here they said they have no right to do it. So what's the answer? This one, when you start looking at the original context, what comes out is that Jesus, the Jewish people did actually have a law that they had the right to execute someone, but the problem was they had a foreign occupant. That was the Romans. The Romans had come in to the Jewish people and essentially said, your laws are null and void. Now Roman law trumps that. This kind of gets into this argument that I know is kind of a hot topic now. What federal law trumps state law. So the states can create a law, but if federal law trumps it, that's what's happening here. The Jews are saying, we got a law that this guy should be put to death. But you have taken away the right. And that's where the reading comes in, because here they have the law. Here they just don't have the right to enforce because of the Romans, because they've taken occupancy. Here's a funny, what was that? Yeah, they were waiting for a Messiah.
But they're
going to
kill him.
Yeah, it almost made it, it was a catch-22 because the Messiah that came had to claim to be God. I mean, that was the Messiah. The Messiah was God. But if you claim to be God, then you're dead. We're going to kill you. Well, that, you know, it makes, I guess, would-be Messiahs to, you know, not try it out, because it's a little, don't tell anyone, it's a little bit dangerous to become a Messiah. So, yeah. It is kind of an interesting law that was on the books for them. But I guess it stopped people from just going around having blasphemous stuff. But yeah, what would you do then if the Messiah actually showed up? Would you still enforce your own law? Yeah. I love this one. I think this one's hilarious. Should you answer a fool according to his folly? You've seen this one? Yeah. This is a pretty relatively popular one. Here it says, do not answer a fool according to his folly. Here in Proverbs 26, answer a fool according to his folly. And what's funny about that is, this is Proverbs 26, verse 4. This is Proverbs 26, verse 5. They're one verse apart. And they're saying, see, even the writer of Proverbs throws in a contradiction in the Bible. It's not reliable. We can't believe it. So what is it? Should we answer a fool according to his folly, or should we not answer a fool according to his folly? Answer a fool according to his idiocy. According to his stupidity. Should you respond stupidly to a guy who's being stupid, or should you just not respond at all? And the answer to this one is, well, it depends upon the context. I've met people that you can argue all the livelong day, and they're just going to be stupid. And I mean, there's nothing you can do. There's other times when you can point out someone else's stupidity, and it actually does something good. This is the whole Jeff Foxworthy's "Here's Your Sign," where he takes a statement and then he answers the fool according to his folly. You know, you're driving into a gas station because your tire's flat, and the guy comes out and he goes, "Well, is your tire flat?" You know, like it's obvious. And so you answer him stupidly. "Nope, the other three just swelled right up. I have no idea how that happened." Yeah? Yeah? How many people died in this plague? But those who died in the plague numbered 24. Now, this one is not just a numbers thing, because we could answer it the numbers way, just saying, hey, it's just an estimation. But this one, read carefully on this next one. We should not be sexually immoral, as some of them did, and in one day, 23,000 died. In one day. So is it possible 23,000 died and then 1,000 died the next day? Because, yeah. Who was counting? Was there a rounding off issue? Yeah, it's those same things. But these are used, again, on both websites that I looked at. These are these contradictions that they came up with. This one's tough. I'll give you that. When was Jesus Christ crucified? It was the third hour or the sixth hour? How is that possible? This one's a little tougher. I'll give you this. This one, you have to know the difference between Roman time and Jewish time. The Romans counted much like we do. When does the new day start? The new day starts for us midnight, 12:01 a.m. And we count from 12:01 back to 12. That is the day. How does a Jewish person count the day? They count it from sunset to sunset. So we would say, well, now it's like 8 o'clock, but it actually fluctuated as the year. But that would be your 24-hour period. So once the sun went down, you are now in the next day. We would say you're not the next day until you hit midnight. There was 2 days of reckoning. So this was saying the third hour, this one the sixth hour. When you realize that there's a 3-hour time difference often between sunset and midnight, they actually are saying the exact same time. 6 a.m. was when. How about this one? Oh, yeah. Who bought the potter's field? Here it says Judas bought the field. Here it says the chief priest bought the field. Who bought the field? This one probably goes into the land of the both and. I probably shouldn't put it in this category, because who was the one that betrayed Jesus? Judas. So it was Judas's money. What did Judas do with the money? He tossed it into the thing, and the chief priest went out and bought it. So the question, of course, is who then essentially owns it? Because it was Judas's money, so the chief priest went and actually bought it. So was it Judas's? Yeah, it could be both. This would probably be one that you would take to the U.S. Supreme Court and say, who's the rightful owner? Because both of them are probably correct. Here, I'm going to skip forward a little bit. When did they... Yeah, that one's not that good. David bought the threshing floor for how much? This one's a little bit tougher. David brought the threshing floor and the oxen paid 50 shekels of silver. Here, David spent 600 shekels of gold. This one you might be able to figure out. Threshing floor is a big, giant concrete slab. This one, David bought the threshing floor and the oxen. What did David buy here? For the site. Yeah. So is it possible that he bought this for a certain amount of money and then he realized, I need the whole thing? So he goes back and he buys the whole site where that was taking place. This one's a little dumb. I think it's funny because this one shows up. How many animals did Jesus ride in?
One.
Wait a second. Well, yeah, when they brought it, they brought the colt, and he sat on the colt. But over here it said they brought the donkey and the colt. Yeah, a little critical thinking skills. Is it possible to ride two animals at the exact same time? No, you can't. You can only physically ride one animal at a time. Those are real close together, and you want to do the splits. This one is talking about the fact that the colt is the baby animal. Are you going to get the baby animal to do anything unless you have the mama? And so they often would tie the mama to the baby. So when they tied them together, did Jesus ride on them? Because they were tied together, but he was physically only riding the colt. Yeah. Jesus cursed the... Here we go. Last one. We'll skip to the end. Here we go. Last one. Who killed Saul? 1 Samuel 31. Saul said to his armor-bearer, "Draw your sword and run me through." But his armor-bearer was terrified and would not do it. So Saul took his own sword and fell on it. But in 2 Samuel, it's the next chapter, a guy, an Amalekite, an enemy, has come, and he's telling him the story of how Saul died. And he says, "So I stood over him and killed him, because I knew that after he had fallen, he could not survive." That could be. Also, it's an Amalekite. Is it possible he's lying? Yeah? Because what we actually find out, the purpose of the Amalekite coming to tell the story is he wants to curry favor with the king, the new king, King David. So he's saying, "Hey, King David, guess what? I killed your enemy for you." Lo and behold, it actually backfired, and David freaked out and killed the Amalekite. But could the Amalekite have just been a glory hound and saying, "Oh, yeah, I did it. I killed him. Yeah, no, you didn't. You're a liar." Saul fell on his sword. I'm telling you, this is the answer to all of those questions that are out there. Again, I'm always shocked and surprised to find out how people say that there's contradictions in the Bible. Those are 25, well, I cut a couple of them. Those are about 22 of the best contradictions that websites will have out there. And as you can see, they're not really contradictions, are they? They're easily answerable things. And I think they're sometimes kind of fun because it makes us think about what does God's word really say. So my hope for you is after this, you could, if someone comes and says, I've found a contradiction, that you'd be able to say, "Let's look at it." And chances are, after this, you see the general categories that they're going to land in, you'd be able to say, "I think we can answer this question pretty easily." Now, hopefully you won't even have to call me, because you'll see that there are no contradictions. There might be some different points of view, stuff like that, but they're not contradictions at all. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for the chance to study your word, and I pray that you would continue to give us confidence and courage in the Bible, and thank you that it tells us of your son, Jesus Christ, and his great love for us, and thank you that there are no contradictions, but instead just things that we need to investigate.